Hi, and welcome back to The Stacks, a podcast all about books. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and this week we'll be talking about politics and activism with our guest, Harris Cohn. But first, I wanted to let you guys all know about Patreon and our new virtual book club. Patreon is a website that allows listeners and lovers of this show to contribute monthly in exchange for earning perks and access. We just launched our very own video book club for all of our patrons, aka the Stacks Pack. In the book video chat, we discuss the book club picks from the show and have special guests. We had our inaugural book club event last night, and our guest was Nancy Rommelman, who joined us again to talk about Bad Blood. If you're interested in our virtual book club or any of the other perks, go to patreon.com/thestacks and join the fun. I want to give a shout out to our most recent members of the Stacks Pack. They include Jessica Gwynn, Jamie Elzey, and Sarah Hildreth. Thank you, ladies, so much, and thank you to everyone who's joined the Stacks Pack family. If you want to join the awesome community of readers, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/thestacks. If a monthly subscription doesn't work for you, you can always do a one-time contribution at paypal.me/thestackspod. Thank you all so much for anything and everything you've contributed to the show. We couldn't do the show without you, and I'm so, so grateful to have such amazing listeners. We also have two awesome sponsors. Our first sponsor is Audible. Audible is an online audiobook database. They have over 180,000 titles. I'm currently listening to Eloquent Rage by Brittany Cooper, and I am loving this book. I highly recommend it. It's about Black women, feminism, intersectionality, and, of course, Beyonce. It's amazing. Listeners of this show get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Our second sponsor is called My Mentor Book Club. They're a monthly subscription box for nonfiction books. You get two newly released nonfiction books sent to your door with free shipping, and you can cancel at any time. Listeners of the Stacks get 50% off their first month if they go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. One more way you can help support the Stacks is by shopping through the Amazon links in our show notes. We earn a small commission from these purchases, and it comes at no cost to you. Plus, you get to know that your shopping is helping out this show. And don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please, please, please rate and review the show. This week, our guest is Harris Cohn. Harris works in renewable energy by day and is a political activist by nights and weekends. We talk this week about how Harris got involved volunteering for political campaigns and how you can get involved too. We also, of course, talk about books, and everything we talk about this week is in the show notes. And here's my quick little reminder, if it's not too late, make sure you're registered to vote. Okay, here's the episode. Enjoy. Hey, y'all, we are back on the Stacks this week. Our guest is Harris Cohn. Harris works in clean energy for commercial real estate. His company focuses on making buildings carbon neutral. In Harris's spare time, though, he is a political activist and organizer. Harris, welcome to the Stacks.
Well, it's great to be here. All these beautiful volumes of books and things.
Oh, Harris is embellishing what my home looks like. There's no books in the room we're sitting in. So Harris is, let me just warn you, Harris is a bit of an embellisher. Okay, tell us about yourself.
Let's see. I grew up in Berkeley, California.
Okay.
Hotbed of political activism.
That's right.
And at a young age, I decided I was going to be a professional soccer player.
Okay. How'd that work out?
Didn't.
Okay.
Didn't work out. So I started getting into politics mostly right after college during the first Obama campaign.
Great.
But I think generally speaking about me, there's not a whole lot to... It's not that exciting. I'm a
Just a normal young person.
Yeah.
Okay, where do you live?
I spend about half my time in New Orleans and about half my time in New York City.
That's nice.
It's really great.
So you eat good.
I eat great.
So good. And you mentioned, we'll get to your political time with Obama, but before that, how did you get into like carbon neutral life?
Man, I think it was really due to my brother. My brother is this super smart and interesting PhD guy who is a professor.
Okay.
And when I was 19, I literally asked him, what should I do with my life? And he said, climate change is going to be a thing.
Oh.
This was in 2006.
Okay.
And I started learning about the potential impacts of climate change in college at UC Berkeley, where I went to school. Plug, go Bears.
Okay. All right. Relax.
And what I discovered was that climate change has the potential to dramatically alter our entire existence.
Sure.
And as a young 19-year-old, this made me, I didn't really understand the gravity of it mm-hmm. until probably, I still am understanding more of the gravity, but it felt like to me the right thing to focus my professional world on, because my parents have always been very mission driven.
Okay.
My mother does public health research. My father did vision research, and they instilled in me a very simple value. If your professional life is making the world a better place, even if it's in a tiny little way, mm-hmm. you will be happy. You'll be fulfilled and satisfied.
That's so Berkeley. I love that.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So you were like, okay, I'm going to check out climate change e-jobs.
I did. So I first, when this brings us actually to the intersection of politics and my life, which was, I was graduating. I spent all of the spring semester of my senior year doing nothing really more than trolling the job board at UC Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And my major at UC Berkeley was conservation and resource studies. I show up at the Career Center. I tell them what my major is. And they give me this very quizzical look. And I say it again. And they say, oh, I think we had a couple of you in here once. Immediately, my antenna, my alarm bells are going off. She comes back with this manila folder, very thin, with a layer of dust on it. And I swear she blew it off and opened it up. And she said, oh, yeah, a couple of you, your major, were here back in the 90s. I said, oh, great. What are they doing now? You know, saving the world somewhere. They're going to give me a job. It's going to be great. Like, yeah, we got them jobs as Greenpeace clipboard holders right outside of Safeway.
No.
Just trying to get donations and people to sign petitions.
So that's that really good Cal Berkeley education.
That was that Cal Berkeley education. So I spent a lot of time hustling for jobs and stuff. And I decided to go work at a large utility company. Mm-hmm. This was May of my senior year of college. Mm-hmm. And Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E, was hiring. They were hiring for young people to come fill all the roles that the 60-year-olds who are about to retire were going to leave from. And I interviewed and I did my best and I put on my ill-fitting suit. And they gave me a job. They gave me a job offer. And this was in, right around May of 2008 was when I was graduating. And so I had a start date of July 15th when I was going to show up and start my job in this big high-rise in San Francisco. So that's part of the roots of, that's how I extended the climate change-y stuff to my first professional job.
Okay, so you are going to go work in PG&E. And so I kind of know the end of the story, you guys. I didn't just meet Harris today. I kind of know how this story goes. But you're going to go work for PG&E, and between May and July 15th, what happens?
Well, I found out that, let me back up a little bit. I have cousins who are from Chicago.
Okay.
And in January of that year, they told me, watch out. There's this awesome guy running for president named Barack Obama. And you should check him out. He's a great dude. He's going to do good things. So the thing, in March of that year, I jumped on a plane with a couple other Democrats from UC Berkeley. And we flew to Galveston, Texas. And I borrowed my aunt's green station wagon. And we drove all around rural Texas, knocking on doors, trying to get Obama to win the Texas primary.
Nice.
And I met all these interesting young political organizers who were working on his campaign. And I stayed in touch with them. And one of them forwarded me this fellowship announcement. They were taking something called Obama Organizing Fellows for the dates of June 1st to, I think it was June 1st to June 31st. And this sounded great to me. Because of that weekend that I spent in Texas, we basically ate barbecue, knocked on doors, talked about stuff we believed in, and met all sorts of really wacky, interesting people. And there was a lot of flirting, and that was great too for a young person.
The good old days.
So I decided to apply, which I have no idea what my application looked like. It was probably half put together sentences. And I remember the last week of school getting this phone call from someone in Chicago saying, is this Harris Cohn? Yes. I'm here. I'm interviewing. Is it okay if we do a 10-minute interview for the organizing fellowship? I said, great. And I have no idea what questions they asked me, but let alone.
You got the job.
I got the job.
You're like giving like literally every detail. It's fine. You get the job. They put you.
I get the job and I worked it out so I would do that month of organizing in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And the reason I picked Colorado is because the convention was going to be there.
Oh, that's right.
So the Democratic National Convention. So I ended up shipping out to Colorado on,
June 1st is great.
June 1st.
This is great. The dates don't matter.
Got to Colorado June 1st and I thought I would be working there for a month. And then I would go back and have a couple weeks and then start my job at PG&E.
But then.
Dun,
dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. I loved it.
So great.
It was the absolute hardest thing I've ever done in terms of effort. You had to try really hard. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about more about what I did and how you try hard. But
well, basically, just give us kind of like a rundown of what your job is. Like quick, you know, like you go to Colorado, you're in a fellowship, but essentially you're working.
Yeah. So for the first 2 weeks, all we learned how to do was tell our personal story.
Which is what? Not you don't tell the story, but what does that mean?
It means you have to be able to relate to people why you put your whole life on pause to go to a new place and try to get Obama elected
right
to the presidency.
So it's basically like a personalized pitch on why this election matters to you. Not so much a pitch, but it's more heartfelt than that, but like a personalized like elevator pitch, if you will, for why this matters.
Yeah, it's supposed to be about 3 to 4 minutes long, and it is supposed to really build a huge amount of trust with the person you're telling it to. Mm-hmm. So what the job can, once we learned how to tell our stories, we received a list of people that had signed up on the Obama website by zip code. Mm. And our job, number one, our job was to find a place to stay. So there was a little checkbox that said, interested in hosting volunteers, like for housing. So our first job was to call these people because 2 days after that, we needed a place to sleep. So I called Mike Callahan in Gunnison, Colorado. Shout out to Mike. Hope you hear this. Mm. And with a little bit of convincing, he gave me his spare bedroom, which was great. He also gave me a car, which was a
really great
1990 Nissan. It was awesome. Mm. So then I spent 4 weeks calling people, the email didn't exist. Texting didn't exist at the time. Mm. It existed, but not to do this work. Calling people at home, convincing them to come meet me in a coffee shop, and telling them the 4 to 5 minute version of why I showed up to work on the campaign. And then this was probably the most powerful thing, asking them why they liked Obama.
Right. Or why they showed up to meet you.
Why they showed up to meet me.
Right. Because liking Obama is different than actually taking time out of your day to go meet this like smelly kid from Berkeley, which at the time you were really ripe.
Very fair.
Okay. So we're going to, so Harris started organizing in Colorado, working for Obama. So you did the job. And then I'm going to kind of spoil the story a little bit. You didn't go back to PG&E on July 15th, did you?
I didn't.
You stayed.
I stayed. They offered me a minimum wage gig.
They being Obama's peeps.
They being Obama's peeps in Colorado.
Obama, David Axelrod, you know, David Plouffe.
Tapped me on the shoulder specifically. Said, Harris, we've had our eye on you. Amongst the 1,000 other people
we love you
in
that Nissan. You're looking good, boo. You got that supporter housing. Stay.
So I stayed. And I remember writing this very long letter to PG&E, convincing them to let me stay. And I got a one-word back reply, which was something like, see you in November. It was very short. I figured.
Sure.
They don't actually care about me that much. No. So I stayed. And I was responsible for organizing 6 counties in the southwest corner of Colorado. And I even got the chance to try to recruit other people to come and help me organize there, mm-hmm. which was such a cool opportunity. Mm. And luckily, I found some really amazing people who wanted to come join.
Is that me?
That's you.
Okay, so Harris is lying. What really happened was that while Harris was off between July, before he went back to his job that he didn't go back to, we hung out because we knew each other from growing up. And he was like, we need volunteers. And I was like, that's cool. You're weird. And so my best friend and I, we watched the convention and we said, we want to go help. So we called Michigan because that was a swing state. And we said, whoever in the office, like, we want to come to Michigan. And they were like, we don't know what to do. So then I called you and I was like, can we come to Colorado? And Harris told us we would work for 3 days on and 4 days off, 4 days of vacation a week, 3 days on. We get there. 0 days of vacation. We worked for the entire like 45 days straight, not a day of vacation, 20 hour days. And I can concur, it is the greatest, hardest, most fulfilling, crazy work ever. That being said, after you worked on the campaign, your life was changed. You felt like you'd done all this amazing stuff. And then you went to work for PG&E. You didn't like change your life career goals.
I didn't. And it is a... I didn't, but I did in the following way. Obama and being a political organizer has a lot of selling involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
You're constantly trying to convince people to at least see things your way and see things how you care about them.
Right.
While also asking them about what they care about. That's the nuts and bolts of doing politics in general. But as an organizer, you are calling people on the phone, like 40 of them a night.
Mm-hmm.
You're knocking on 50 doors a day. There are lots of other ways to get politically active, which we can talk about. But a lot of it is being very personable and selling things.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started working at PG&E, I did a lot of contract stuff. We were trying to buy renewable energy from mm-hmm. solar farms and windmills. And my job was to evaluate the financials and then make sure that the legal contracts made sense. And all those things were going to fit together. It wasn't until I got to actually do my first negotiation to get a power plant that was using renewable biofuels back up and running that I realized that there was some really fun interpersonal stuff happening. So I spent 3 years at PG&E learning the ins and outs of the business, and I jumped into a sales job at a different clean energy company than I'm at now because it felt like political organizing.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like I was selling a mission right. of clean and renewable energy, which reminded me of selling this transformative candidate.
Sure.
Like Obama.
So I don't really know much about clean energy. Like I always say to people, you know, if you're interested in politics, like you should pick things that you're passionate about and you should focus on those things and let other people who are passionate about other things do that work. So like, I'm not a super like green person. Like I have a reusable straw and stuff, but like it's not something that I'm excited about because I'm not really sciencey minded. But for people who are listening who maybe don't know a ton about, you know, renewable energy or climate change or that kind of stuff, like are there any books that you might recommend to people or like, you know, books that you've read that have influenced your work in that field?
Actually, okay. I can give you an answer here. I really think that there is a writer, named Elizabeth Colbert.
Okay.
Unrelated to Stephen Colbert.
Okay.
You spell her name K-O-L-B-E-R-T.
All right.
And she writes for The New Yorker.
Okay.
And her main thing that she writes about is climate change and politics of climate change.
Okay.
So she does a great job of breaking things down into bite-sized pieces.
Okay. I'll link to her and all the other stuff we talk about in the show notes. Actually, on that, there is one writer that I know that I like. His name is Van Newkirk, and he writes for The Atlantic. And he writes about climate change, but also about the racial politics of it. He's a black guy in D.C., so he spent a lot of time like in Puerto Rico talking about the hurricane and like what is politically involved and like the power struggle around climate change. And so that's interesting too. And I read some of his stuff, but even that is hard for me to understand because, you know, like I said, it's just not something that I'm passionate about. So I don't spend a ton of time there, which might not be super admirable, but truthful.
I started reading Van Newkirk because of you. He writes at The Atlantic.
Yeah. He's so great. I love him. He's so great. Okay, let's talk briefly just about getting involved in campaigns, because as someone who's done it, both you and I'm sure you get a lot of questions from people that are like, I want to help out. Like, what can I do? I don't want to knock on doors, or like, I don't want to make phone calls. And I'm interested to hear what your response is to that. And then I'll tell you what I always tell people. Go ahead.
My response to that is get your ass out on the doors and mm-hmm. make some phone calls.
It's not that scary.
It's just not that scary.
It's just not that scary.
Now, I think it's fair to say that we are both pretty extroverted people.
Sure, but I was a black girl, 22, in Southwest rural Colorado. I got called the N-word. Like, people tried to pull guns on us. Like, so you're probably going to be fine. That sounds really scary, but even that wasn't that scary.
Well, you're exceptionally brave.
Right. Maybe. I don't know. That's nice. If you're extroverted, it's not that scary. But also, if you're really nervous, take your friend with you.
Take your friends with
Three
you.
Three friends with you.
It is a really fun way to spend an afternoon.
It is.
Dead honest. At the same time, there are so many other ways to get involved
sure.
that are not as having to talk to other people.
Sure. And you can, like, sorry to interrupt, but like if you're feeling scared or nervous about knocking on doors, you know, you go to your local campaign office and they'll put you on the phones and you'll make a few phone calls and you'll have the conversations that you were scared to have. And then all of a sudden the doors don't seem as scary. But just like, as I said, take friends with you. My best friend came with me when we went to Colorado to work with Harris, and she and I would take a street and she would do the evens and I would do the odds. So you were always like within eyeshot. We would never get away from each other. But in the beginning, we knocked doors together like two Girl Scouts, like, do you want to buy cookies for Obama? So there are ways to knock doors that aren't that scary. I just want to throw that out there because I know that's a huge fear. Phone calls. But then Harris, tell some other ways.
Yeah. One of the best ways that I recall being so appreciative of and making so many fun friends was actually there's someone called the Comfort Captain.
Donna, shout out.
Donna Fitzpatrick.
She was our Comfort Captain.
In Cortez, Colorado, mm-hmm. is a wonderful woman. She'll probably have a spare puppy for you if you mm-hmm. go visit her.
She's the best.
But she would just make us food.
Mm-hmm.
And not just us. She would make all 20 people who showed up on a daily basis to volunteer food. And these little campaign offices, which here we are in mid-October, are going to be springing up and have already been in existence for the last few months, they've got young, interested people who care about the future of the world eating delicious home-cooked food.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a recipe you want to try out, or if you want to support the people that are making the phone calls and knocking on the doors, bake a casserole.
Sure.
Bake a pozole.
Sure. That's not
drop
something
you it
bake,
off at the
yeah. Well, the truth is, so where we were in Colorado was a very red county, and a lot of the people who we spoke to were like, I support Obama, I plan to vote for the Democrats, but I don't want my neighbors to know. So I don't want to knock doors, not because I'm scared of knocking doors, but because I don't want my neighbors to know my politics. So that was a really great way for those people to be involved in the campaign. Also, supporter housing. If you have an extra room or two and you don't mind having some strangers, because some of the work is scary, but there are people who are willing to come from out of town and do it. And like, I don't care if your neighbor knows I vote for Obama, like I'm going to be gone in a little bit, but I do need like a shower.
Yeah. Yeah. Hosting some of these younger people who are on the road and doing this is an incredible way to meet like-minded people who you would have never encountered before.
Mm-hmm.
I go back to this, but a lot in my head, and I don't think I've ever said it out loud. Politics is the new Topgolf.
I don't know what Topgolf is. Sounds okay. Terrible.
Topgolf is like the Chuck E. Cheese for suburban adults.
Okay.
It is a golf. It is a golf driving range
uh-huh.
full of arcade games and pinball machines and terrible food and cheap drinks.
Okay.
And they play Top 40.
Great.
And they have couches to watch people hit golf balls.
Okay.
So, and it costs an absurd amount of money. But my theory is that people just want to see other people. Mm-hmm. We're all on our phones all day.
I see.
Doing all this individualistic stuff. People just want some experiences to actually connect with other folks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the slightest inkling that you want to see something a little different happen politically, the payoff is not just what might be a good political result, but it's actually the fun 3 hours you spend meeting new people.
Sure.
Go if you're single, I guarantee that's a great place to go meet someone.
Right.
So there are lots of ways of getting involved, and the biggest, most important thing is just to get off the couch and go do it.
Right. Go do something. The other way that you can be a part also, I think, is worth saying, this is not separate from the other options, but in addition to, is if you're financially able to donate to campaigns. You know, no one likes to talk about donating money, but it's a thing. And if you're able to do it, that's great. If not, your time is valuable. If you're able to do both, that's wonderful too. I'm just throwing that out there because there are also people who are like, I travel all the time. I can't go anywhere. I work, you know, crazy hours. I have 5 kids. Like, you know, I get it. Life is hard. Life is not easy. And any ways you can help, whether it's making a casserole, knocking on, you know, some doors. You know, we set up something called the Barack Stars of Montezuma County, and it was all the high school kids who couldn't vote yet, but were passionate. So if you are a parent and you have teenagers and they're interested and they care, you know, make it a family thing. It's fun. And also having children with you when you knock doors is, makes you feel very safe because no one's going to fuck with your kids. And if they do, call me and I'll come out there and get them. Okay. So just the last little thing, in case you are interested, do you have any organizations that people should know about where they can reach out? Because I was lucky that I had you and I could reach out and say, Claire and I are coming. But what if, like what happened to me, you call Michigan. You're like, hello, state of Michigan. We're here to help. And they're like, we don't know you. What, like, where should we go?
Yeah, I've got a couple of good ones. Basically, every single large progressive democratic organization is teaming up to aggregate everyone that wants to help for the last weekend before mm-hmm. the midterm elections, which is literally in 2 weeks. So this is called, it's actually called The Last Weekend.
Oh, it's not called GOTV anymore? Get out the vote?
It is called GOTV, okay. But The Last Weekend
is the name of the organization.
It's the name the organization. And it's got people like Swing Left, Move On, Indivisible, Organizing for America, which is the Obama campaign's new organization. It's got everyone you can imagine. And so if you go to thelastweekend.org, you can put your name in, you can put your phone number in, put an email address in, and they'll contact you for what's going on around you that last weekend. If you didn't know, the U.S. Congress is up for election. The entire House of Representatives is getting elected. And there's about 235 of them. And there's over 90, I think, districts, which is basically like almost half of the country. So no matter where you are, you should be able to find a place where there's some interesting political activism going on mm-hmm. and that you can be a part of.
Right.
And so this is the, if you only want to commit for a weekend, this would be the best place to find it. And then Swing Left is the folks who've put together that list of those 90 districts. And they will have things going on starting right now. I guarantee you there's an mm-hmm. event tonight, not probably less than 30 miles from you that yeah. you can go participate in.
Right. And if you want to travel for this, you know, if you have the means and you want to go somewhere that you think might be more exciting, like where there's a governor's race or something, like you should definitely reach out because I'm sure they have supporter housing and they're waiting for you. If you feel like where I live, I don't have something exciting, or, you know, my senator or my congressperson is pretty safe. Like, you could travel. I think, you know, my plan is to go just an hour outside of LA. There's a bunch of interesting races that are contenders, and I'm not going to travel far this year. But, you know, if that's something that you're interested in, it's kind of fun. We've done it a bunch.
Couldn't agree more.
It's really fun. So, you know, try to make this fun for yourself. But let me just say this last little thing before we move on, or two last little things. One is that, no matter what you do, please today make sure that you're registered to vote and make sure that you have a plan to vote. Because in the end, if that's the only thing you're able to do, that's not an only thing, that is everything. So please make sure that you're registered and that you go vote and you have a plan. And if you can take someone with you, take someone with you. The other thing that I was going to say, I forgot, because it was so important that you vote.
Because voting is the only thing.
I know what I was going to say. I was listening. Do you ever listen to Larry Wilmore's podcast?
Sure.
So recently he had on Eric Holder and they were talking and they were saying, you know, that the idea of like every vote counts is kind of misleading because it's not just that every vote counts. It's also that every election counts and that we've gotten in this habit of only voting every 4 years because that's the only election that we think that matters. But these local and state elections, these midterm elections especially, but any election that happens in your area, like, you should be getting yourself in that habit to vote. So just a reminder that not only should you vote, but you should vote all the time.
And the most exciting stat related to that, I, as a stat nerd, I like some stats. The population of Americans aged, I believe it's 18 to 24, uh-huh. is now the largest section of the American population.
Okay.
It's bigger than baby boomers.
Wow.
And they never vote.
Well, some of them have never been able to vote.
Some of them have never been able to vote. But no, that age group, that sure. age group just doesn't vote.
Right.
And so if you're listening and you know an 18 to 24 year old, or
and
you
know
18
and 24 year olds who like to listen to book podcasts.
But you probably know some
of
them.
Yeah, you do.
Get on them. Because if they voted, this country would have a much different look to it.
Right. And, you know, obviously, our politics are left-leaning, but if you're right-leaning, you should go get your community active, too. Like, this isn't necessarily a call to action for the left. It's a call to action for your civic responsibility. So if you have a candidate that you love who's a Republican or a Green Party or whatever it is that you're passionate about, just go do it. Okay, we're done. Wait, I do have one more question. You have a full-time job. You travel for work. How do you make time to be involved politically?
It comes at the expense of other things.
Sure.
But the level of fulfillment that you get out of it, or that I get out of it, is much greater than throwing back a couple beers at a bar with random folks that I don't see that often.
Right.
So the people that don't do it that often, political activism, probably don't quite understand that type of fulfillment.
Sure.
I don't mean that. That sounds bad. That sounds
no,
mean.
You're just saying like you got to try it to understand it, basically.
You got to try it a few times to understand it because it makes you feel way different than just doing something that's recreational.
Sure. And yeah, I can't stress, get some friends to come with you because that makes it even more fun. If you don't have friends to go with you, that's fine too. You'll meet people, but it is fun to go with your friends and do this. We have a whole crew that we do this with, and it's like whenever there's elections coming, I'm like, where's the Elmers? We call ourselves the Elmers, Team Elmers, because we're the glue.
Shout out Team Elmers.
Team Elmers. Also, one other thing that you can do, which I found out someone from Team Elmers told me about, they have ways where you can literally from your computer text people. They don't ever get your phone number. You just text them like on the last weekend, reminding them to go vote. And here's your polling location. So if that's something you're able to do, like it all matters and it all counts. Okay, we're going to move off of this kind of. We're going to move on to Harris's reading habits.
Oh, boy.
Unless you have anything else you want to add, but I feel like we've covered.
I agree.
I feel like we've really hammered home the point that we want you to be involved in the community civically. Okay. Harris, what are two books you love and one book you hate?
The two books that I think I love above all others. Okay. One is East of Eden by John Steinbeck.
Okay.
And the other is City of Thieves.
I love that book. David Benioff. Benioff. You tried to recommend it to me in like a few weeks ago. And what? I was like, I read that 6 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
It's amazing. And if for those who might recognize David Benioff's name.
Game of Thrones. And husband to.
Oh, this I don't know.
Amanda Peet, the actress.
Wow.
Yeah. I think they're still married.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Also wrote, which is a great book. Oh, and a better movie.
What?
Is The 25th Hour.
Oh, yes.
A with Spike Lee
Ed
joint.
Norton.
That's right.
When he was famous. And Philip Seymour Hoffman was in it.
That's right. Philip Seymour Hoffman is like a fun sidekick.
He was like a drug addict. Best friend.
That's right.
Super fun.
Sidecar Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Super fun. Okay, what about a book you hate? You don't hate a book.
I don't hate books. Okay. I think all books are wonderful. Some are boring.
Sure. What's a boring book? Like a book that makes you roll your eyes? No? Or a book maybe you didn't finish? I know you have some of those.
A book I didn't finish?
No, nothing's coming to you.
I think, a book I hate? I think I hate Catcher in the Rye.
Oh my God, me too.
I kind of hate it.
It's not great.
It's like this like malaise-y, it's just malaise. I think I understand like, sometimes I feel sad, but to then read a whole book about it, it's not for me.
Do you remember when you read that book in your life?
That was a high school one. Yeah, that was like a high school.
So you should have
English
liked
class.
It. Because like I read that book after college and I was like, this book does not connect with me. Like I don't relate to this sad boy. But I feel like for men who read it in high school, they do connect with it. But you're different.
I didn't understand what he had to be sad about.
Yeah.
As if I don't remember it very well, but
that's
he was at
remember.
A boarding school. He was.
I don't remember it at all.
His family kind of sucked, maybe. I don't know.
Anyways, boo-hoo. Okay. What's the last great book you read?
The last great book I read. I love nonfiction.
Okay.
So I just read a book that was 250 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Get through it in 3 days. Mm-hmm. It's called The Lost City of the Monkey God.
Oh, yeah. I've
Seriously?
Heard of that. It's like about like it's a South American. It's not Colombia. It's like. Where it takes place in South America, right?
It takes place in Central America.
Oh, where?
Totally different place than South America, but it is.
Where? What country? It's like Nicaragua or Ecuador or something.
It is the country of.
Oh, God.
This is embarrassing.
Okay.
I believe it's.
Okay, I'll Google it. Keep talking. Tell us about the book.
Basically, there is this amazing civilization that postdated the Maya.
Mm-hmm.
That is, so we're talking about like the 1100s.
Okay.
And they built this these incredible stone cities in the middle of the Honduran jungle. I'm sure it's Honduras.
Okay.
Am I right?
I don't know. I'm waiting for it to come up. Keep talking.
And so they built these amazing structures, and the jungle there is so aggressive that it completely covered it up.
Wow.
So what you'll find in the book is that for roughly 500 years, no person has ever set foot in these places, besides like some very small indigenous communities.
Wow.
That are there, but not really, because it's a really harsh place to live. And so this whole book of how they found it and the politics around it and what it contains and why it's there is fascinating.
How much are you willing to wager that it's Honduras?
God, I'm going to lose. It's Guatemala?
How much are you willing to wager?
I will wager I'll wager $33.68.
Perfect. You nailed it. $33.68. Honduras!
Hey! That makes me very happy.
Yeah, so it takes place in Honduras. Okay. What are you currently reading?
I am currently trying to hack my way through a book called My Summer in the Sierra, which is written by John Muir, who was literally a sheep herder before he became a famous environmentalist that helped establish Yosemite and went on this cool walk with the president in a secret way with Theodore Roosevelt. He was a sheep herder, and all he loved to do was read and write about plants and draw them. So he found a job as a sheep herder in the 1850s and went on a trip in the Sierra. And I love the Sierra. I think the mountains are beautiful. So I'm trying to – the Sierra of Northern California.
Got it.
So I'm trying to get through that.
How is it?
Super dry.
Okay.
It's like you know those like ship logs? You know,
sure.
Like day four, like the seas were rough.
It's like a journal.
It's a journal, but he's sheep herding.
Right.
So and talking about plants.
It's not even like a ship where it's like, there's a storm coming. We're nervous.
Or like we ran out of hardtack.
Right. And we have dysentery.
Like, they don't even have fun names for things like bosun and aft. It's just sheeps.
All right. Well.
But the Sierras are beautiful. So
and you're getting that part of it from the book, you think. Okay.
We'll see.
If you've read this book, please let us know if it's any good. How do you pick your next book?
I asked the smartest, most intelligent people I know, what book are you reading?
Great.
And I try to read that.
And that's how you got John Muir. What's his name? John Muir?
His name's John Muir, yes. No, I got that because I want to go backpacking on the John Muir Trail at some point. So okay. I figured I better read about the guy.
Read what you're going to see.
Yeah.
Got it. What's a book that you like to recommend to people?
I love recommending a book called The Name of the Wind.
I don't know that. You've never recommended it to me.
Well, it's because you read serious literature. That's why.
No, I don't.
A barn burner.
Okay.
It's written by a guy named Patrick Rothfuss.
Okay.
Rothfuss.
It'll be in the show notes.
Show notes. Hashtag. And it's a two-parter with a third part coming.
Okay.
And it's basically the next Game of Thrones.
You
heard it here first.
Okay.
So they're actually, you'll love this, Lin-Manuel Miranda is reportedly helping write the music that is interspersed throughout this book.
Do you want to hear an unpopular opinion?
Oh.
I do not like Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Like, you don't like him as a person?
He annoys
me. Work?
He's just annoying to me. Look, he's a great writer. He's a great, like, his music is great. Like, Hamilton's a great show. But he's just so corny and, like, so angsty. I don't know. I don't buy into his, like, false humility. He just seems like, oh, I can't believe I'm here. Like, I can't believe I'm here. I'm like, you believe you're here. You have a Grammy, an Emmy, and a Tony. Like, what do you think you were going to be invited to the Tonys this year? Like, he's a great writer. I just wish I'm a theater person, so, you know, I have snobby theater opinions. His show is great. I wish he was never in it. I wish he cast someone who could sing better and Hamilton could sing more and be like a more dynamic character. But
you just got a little New York accent when you started talking about the theater.
Well, that you know, it comes back. Look, Hamilton's a great show. In the Heights is great. I probably won't see Mary Poppins. I don't know why his voice is in Moana. He doesn't need to sing in Moana. Like, he put his voice in. I don't know. He just irks me.
Irking aloud.
Yeah.
But he's going to write some great lyrics.
Great. As long as you don't then hear his like little thin voice singing it.
God, shots fired.
There's so many talented people in the theater. I feel that they should be doing the performing. Like, Stephen Sondheim doesn't write himself into his shows, and he's a genius. So why are you here?
I I don't know literally anything about the theater, but I think there's a probably a handful of theater people that wrote stuff and that also sung it that are pretty awesome. Like Barbara Streisand? I don't know.
No, she's a performer.
Oh, really? Okay.
I mean, she wrote her own songs, but like Andrew Lloyd Webber isn't in cast. That's true. You know, like even Elton John, who wrote stuff for Broadway, he wasn't in those shows.
Maybe is like, and like Hans Zimmer isn't in all the Christopher Nolan movies.
Well, I don't analogy? Think he's a analogy? Sure. I don't know. This is just my like, I don't like Lin thing. I don't know. I think he's talented. I'm not taking away from his skills. I don't want anybody to be like, Lin's amazing. What do you know? He's great. I just don't think he's that good of a performer.
Let me turn the podcast around for a second. If you could ask one question of Lin-Manuel Miranda at a press conference or just in a gaggle, what would you ask him?
Huh?
Only one.
Does he have to answer honestly?
Yeah, he'll answer honestly. I mean, I think if you ask nicely.
Okay, I think I might ask something along the lines of, if you could go back and rewrite Hamilton, would you write a character for Hamilton that had the equal chops of Burr?
Whoa.
Because in the musical, Burr sings and he's got an amazing singing voice. He also raps. He like dances. But Lin can't do all of those things. So Hamilton basically only raps. So I wonder if he would think about making them more equal adversaries, because I feel like that's one of the problems with the show for me, is that Burr is like so amazing and Hamilton's kind of just mediocre. And I feel like it would be great if they were actually equal. So you were like, what the fuck is going to happen? There's so much tension. That would be my question. I have a feeling that he would say, no, I still want to be Hamilton. You know,
right, because by extension, he might not get to play that role.
Well, right. Like, basically, I'm asking you, do you think you could remove your ego and make this show better? But I would say it nicer, because I'm at a press conference and other people would be like, that angry black woman, Serena Williams of podcasting. Okay.
I'm gonna make you a plaque.
Yeah, please. I would love to be the Serena Williams of podcasting. Someone who knows Serena Williams told me that I reminded them of Serena and I cried. Okay, we're so far off track right now that it's actually amazing. Okay, we're going to bring it back. What's the last good book someone recommended to you?
The last good book is called Sing, Unburied, Sing.
Oh, by Jessamyn Ward.
The South.
She's so amazing.
I'm living in the South. I figured I got to understand a little bit better.
You should read her other book, Men We Reaped. We did it on the show, episode 4 with Sarah Fong. So good. It's her memoir. It's insane. You'll love it. So good. Best book you received as a gift?
Danny, Champion of the World, 10th birthday, Roald Dahl.
Wow.
It turns out he was like maybe an abuser and a drunk, but the dude can write some
great
YA.
Writer.
He can write some YA.
He didn't write himself into those stories.
That's a good one.
Just saying. Are there things that maybe you wish were different about your reading?
I really wish I read more fiction.
Why?
Oftentimes I pick up a novel. I think my attention span is really short. I think the Twitterverse and the Instagram world has made my attention span way shorter than it used to be.
And that affects fiction more than nonfiction?
Yeah, because nonfiction's got there's less development and less
I see. You
richness.
Don't have to pay attention as much, kind of.
Yeah.
I see. That's
I'm super embarrassed about it, but that's the one thing I wish I could change.
Huh. I like that. I mean, I don't like fiction, so I don't really read much of it, but I've started to, and it definitely is a different muscle.
What I would find really helpful would be I don't know if you're the person to put this together, but you read a lot, is what's like the 120-page novel I need to read, then the 140-page, then the 180, then the 200. And maybe page numbers don't matter, but maybe it's level of richness to get back to that, like being able to appreciate a deep fiction.
I just read If Beale Street Could Talk by James Baldwin, and they're making it into a movie, and it's very short, and I loved it. I was literally screaming at the book, being like, yo, I can't believe.
The James Baldwin comeback not comeback, but like resurfacing.
Yeah, well, he's just super relevant. Like, the book was written in like the 50s or the 60s, and I was like, you could have written, besides the girl drinking whiskey while she's pregnant, it's like, this could be yesterday. It's like pretty amazing.
Show notes. I'm going to check those for that book.
It feels like a talk. It's so good. Shop through the show notes and you help support this podcast. Did you know that if you use the links in the show notes to like buy things on Amazon, anything, not just the books, then we get a small commission and you help make the show amazing.
Get in those show notes, y'all.
So if you guys are in the show notes, get in there. Any genres that you avoid? I mean, you kind of just said fiction is something you're not that into. Or what about a genre that you love?
Okay. I avoid romance novels.
Okay.
Only because I associate them with, well, they are the novels at the front of that of the supermarket.
Oh, yeah.
I don't actually know if they're there anymore.
They're not. But like those like glossy, like mass markets.
And the, given my attention span for deep literary fiction, I think I should just go read romance novels.
Maybe.
I think that could be like my on track back to on ramp back to fiction. Can I give a plug? Can I give a shout out? My two cousins run one of the only romance only bookshops in the, I think in the United States.
They're in LA.
Yeah. It's in
Culver City.
It's
I believe
Main Street, Culver City. It's called the Ripped Bodice.
The Ripped Bodice.
Very, very highfalutin.
I like that.
Yet also
I should go check
romance-y.
Them out. I should get them on the pod.
They're a lot of fun.
Favorite books about politics?
My absolute favorite book about politics is called, it's a Steinbeck. It's called In Dubious Battle. And it is about a union labor uprising in the apple orchards of the Central Valley of California, or like the Coastal Valley of California. it lays it out really well. And then
nonfiction though.
No, it's a novel.
Oh,
it's
there
a novel.
You go.
Yeah, it's a punchy Steinbeck.
There you go.
Punchy. And then with a clear message. That guy was a total commie.
Got it.
He's great. And then the Audacity of Hope, I think, is a Obama's a great writer.
Mm-hmm.
And just apply anytime someone tells you, "Oh, you'll never be able to do that."
Right.
I think people should just respond with, I have the audacity of hope or something along those lines.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to be honest. When Claire and I went to Colorado, we drove from California and we listened to it on audiobook and he narrates it. And it's a little dry. It's kind of a policy book. Like I'm going to run for office, but it is really inspiring and exciting. And his voice, especially now, whenever I hear it, like on the daily, if they have a clip of him, I'm like, oh,
wait
there
a minute.
He is.
He reads it?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I gotta go get the audiobook now.
Well, we could, you know, listen to it through Audible because Audible is a sponsor here at the Stacks. I wasn't planning to do this now, but we're gonna do it. Audible's our sponsor. If you go to audibletrial.com/thestacks, you get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download. And you can use it on The Audacity of Hope or Dreams of My Father, which I believe he also narrates. And Michelle's book is coming out in November. It'll be out in a month. I bet she'll read it. Becoming. I can't wait. I'm trying to get a guest to be on the show in the early winter to do that. I have some cool people that I'm trying to get. So hopefully I could get someone good.
Luminaries.
Yeah. I have a wish list that involves a senator from California that I don't think I'm going to be able to get, but maybe some people around her would be interested in coming to LA. Do you have Audible?
I do have Audible.
Do you like it?
It's got me through many long plane rides. I really, really appreciate it. And it's not carrying a book with you that you're going to rip and tear and. Like I like physical books for sure, but when I travel a lot for work, so it's very hard to carry a book with you when you do that much traveling. And so it's great to have it on your phone, and it's great to listen to it. Just sit back, zone into. I actually looked this up when I was getting into Audible. Was that the comprehension of doing an audiobook versus reading it is pretty much equal? They've done some scientific studies.
That's interesting.
You're not losing anything by listening to it.
That's great. So go to audibletrial.com/thestacks, free 30-day trial, free audiobook download. That kind of takes us into my next question, which is how do you like to read? So you do Audible, you like a physical book. Do you have a Kindle for travel or no? Or an iPad or whatever?
I do have a Kindle.
Uh-huh. But you don't use it.
I have no idea where it went.
Cool.
Which is a problem.
Great.
I do end up reading all my guilty pleasures, City of Thieves, Name of the Wind, all these books that you read 10 times are on my phone.
Okay.
So.
Interesting. You can read on your phone. I always think it's too small.
Oh, you just got to increase that font size.
Like my mom's. My mom's font on her phone is like 3 letters per screen. You have to scroll. It's amazing.
You get those lateral thumb muscles. Really
I see. Really strong.
Yeah. My ideal reading setup, if I wasn't reading on my phone, would be. There is a $10,000 idea in here.
Okay.
A book holder that attaches to a hammock.
Because
when you're in a hammock, it's very uncomfortable to be in the hammock and and hold a book. So if like a book holder could just hang a book in front of my eyes.
I read in my hammock.
It works out.
It works out fine. If you sit cross-legged also, then you kind of spread the hammock and then you have a little more space for your arms.
Check that out.
But I do. I have a hammock that I love to read in. What's the last book that made you laugh?
This one was hard for me. I have no idea when I read this, but I definitely, the book I laughed the most at was Me Talk Pretty One Day.
Oh, okay. David Sedaris. Yeah. What about the last book that made you cry?
The last book that made me cry was literally last night.
Oh, God.
Reading to my nephews.
Oh.
The Lorax.
Oh, that's a good one. But your nephews were like, Uncle, what? Why are you weird?
Actually, my nephew is so damn smart. He basically, as we opened the book, he's like, ugh, this isn't going to end well. They're going to cut it. They're going to cut down all the trees. He'd like read it once.
He knew it. He knew it.
I hadn't read it. I don't know, since I was like six.
Spoiler alert. Sorry, guys. The trees.
Going back and reading kids' books that have these very simple parables has been kind of special with nephews.
That's nice. What's the last book that made you angry?
Book that made me very angry is called How Democracies Die.
Oh, that's the book we're doing next week for the Stacks Book Club. So we won't talk about it too much here. I'm very interested. We will continue this conversation next week. What's the last book where you felt like you learned a lot?
There's a book called 1491. I believe it's by a guy named Richard Mann.
I've seen it.
MANN.
Yeah.
And it's all about what the Americas looked like before Columbus showed up.
The good old days.
Literally, yes. Literally the good old days.
That wasn't a joke. That
before
was
the Europeans showed up.
And before shit got fucked up.
It was really, really interesting to see that the Americas were this vibrant, really well-maintained and like symbiotic place. Like the people that lived here, there were so many of them, way more than you read about in your textbook, your history textbook. And they were managing the land and managing their relationship to it in a way that was so much better than what the Europeans brought when they showed.
Sure. That's very 1491. I should check that out. So I have to tell you guys, Harris doesn't have a book that he's proud to have read, which kind of breaks my heart, and it's fine. We'll just skip that one and we'll go to what's a book that you feel embarrassed about not having read? Because this might turn into a book that you're proud to have read once you read it.
That's aspirational. I like it.
You're welcome.
Literally everything by those famous Russian dudes.
Sure.
Crime and Punishment.
I've never done any of them.
Dostoevsky.
Sure.
I don't even.
I think he is Crime and Punishment. I don't know.
Everyone reads these books.
Sure.
I've never read them.
So
whatever.
A lot of the guests who come on this show, that those are the answers for their proud books. It's almost always like Crime and Punishment, Anna Karenina.
Because they made it
the
through.
Brothers Karamazovs. Those brothers. Yeah, because they made it through Count of Monte Cristo, which is French, but that one often gets thrown in there. I would say Gone with the Wind is one of my proud ones because it's a big one, even though I know it's racist. I get it. I'm sorry. Do you have any books like where you have characters that you just love or a character that you just love?
I love Willy Wonka.
This, honestly, if you knew Harris, this would come at no shock to you. This is the most obvious answer I've ever heard. I should have guessed that.
I mean, he gives away his fortune to essentially an orphan off the street.
He
does it in the most hilarious scavenger hunting way.
And
that's fantastic.
Candy and like little Oompa Loompas. It's great. Do you have a favorite book from childhood that's not Willy Wonka?
I would say that James and the Giant Peach was...
So you love Roald Dahl.
I love Roald Dahl.
I do too. I love James and the Giant Peach.
But also Shel Silverstein writes some poetry.
Yes. Ugh, where the
sidewalk ends. Does that have a place in the Stacks?
Yeah. I have that book here. It sits out prominently on my bookshelf. It's like one of the ones that has its own kind of area. I love it so much.
Shel is badass.
Yeah. I love Roald Dahl. Matilda. That's Roald Dahl, right?
So absolutely. Good. BFG.
BFG. Awesome. So good. I can't think about
that. That's the big friendly giant. And for those out there, doll fans.
There is another use of that word, that term colloquially, but it's not nice. It's a big friendly giant, people. Don't worry. What about a favorite book that was assigned to you in school?
The absolute best book that got assigned to me in school was White Teeth by Zadie Smith.
Oh, yeah.
I took, instead of my English requirement.
What school? College.
At UC Berkeley.
We're too old for that to be high school. Nice try. Try to act like you're young.
I took a film studies class.
Oh, cool.
And they assigned White Teeth, and then we got to watch movies.
Nice. Amazing. Yeah. Is there a book where you saw yourself reflected back?
This is also a little obvious, but the main character in City of Thieves is a coming of age young Jewish kid who is like doesn't have any idea how to act around women, and he goes on this adventure and he becomes somewhat of a more mature person, becomes a man.
Got it.
By the end of the book.
Amazing.
I think it's like an hopefully
that's also aspirational for you.
Yeah, I'm still working on some of that.
All right, who do you want to write the book of your life?
All right, so I'm a huge SNL fan.
Okay.
And because you know me, this current cast of SNL, they're in it.
They're all bad.
Wow.
Sorry.
Shots fired.
I hate SNL.
I want to see if you can guess.
Who would write your
book? Yeah, also a prominent writer on the show, not just a cast member.
It's cast and write.
He appears in both.
It's a he. Oh, so not Kate McKinnon. That would have been the only answer. Or Leslie Jones. The only answer I would have cared about. Keenan?
I haven't seen Keenan do
stand-up.
I saw Michael Che do stand-up.
Oh, that's who you want to write your book?
He's a hilarious guy.
Okay. Well, I saw the Emmys and no, he's not.
Oh, God. Yeah, that is bad timing. I didn't see it. He's not good, huh?
We're not going to allow your book
to be written by Michael
him.
Che?
Hey, no.
If Michael Che
Moving
wants to
on. Okay, next question.
Wait, time out. Does everyone else answer that with an author? Like an actual person that writes books, not someone who writes jokes?
Yeah, most people pick an author to write their life story because they believe in their own legacy, their potential for a future. Literally, the Michael Che Harris Cohn autobiography is like my nightmare.
It also might be like a comic book. It's like it only
also
has like six words in it.
It might not get published. It might be a self-published, if you guys can get it together enough. I thought maybe you were going to say like Lorne Michaels or like, I don't know, Seth Meyers, someone actually important, famous. Okay. Were there any books that influenced you in your professional career or inspired you to be who or where you are now kind of thing?
Absolutely. The Audacity of Hope. Mm. And then I mentioned already, but the In Dubious Battle one.
Okay.
Because it also has to do with nature and the environment.
All your things coming together right there. Do you have any favorite authors besides Michael Che of SNL fame?
Shout out Michael
Che. And Roald Dahl.
I think my absolute favorite author is Steinbeck.
Yeah. That's a theme.
It's a theme.
It's a theme.
I'm super like three-dimensional. Like
yeah.
Michael Che, Roald Dahl,
three-dimensional Steinbeck. Means that you're full. You would be two-dimensional.
I mean, all three dimensions of all three dimensions of those men are.
Just kidding. Harris is great. He's very smart. What is a book that you've read that you thought, dang, this could be a TV show or a movie?
Okay, I've got another one.
City of Thieves.
Where is that?
Where is that movie?
Benioff.
Hello. He has all the access. Anyways, okay.
Well, I think it's actually about his grandfather.
Okay, well, like,
do you believe that whole thing?
I can't remember.
Get him
well
on the
enough.
Pod. Let's ask him.
Maybe I could.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Of course.
I doubt it.
Of course.
He just won an Emmy. He hates me. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so this is fiction, but trashy fiction.
Okay.
I actually don't know the author's name, but it's called Red Sun Rising.
Okay.
And it is like a space sci-fi battle royale.
Okay.
That would look really sick on with some like, you know, Marvel style.
All right.
Stuff
action-y.
Going on. Yeah, it's trash. They're probably going to make it. And it's going to be action.
And you're going to be the first
trash.
One in line in costume ready to go.
Just with chanting. There's a chant. Don't worry about it. It's sweet.
Great. I would like this to get made so I can get you on my Insta story doing the chant. Okay. I stole this one from the New York Times by the book. It's my favorite question. If you could recommend one book to the current United States president, what book would you pick?
My answer is The Lorax.
Okay.
It's simple. Right. It is so childlike that it might act like he might
understand it.
It's mean to say that he doesn't understand adult things because he really does, but right. I don't think he cares about them too much.
Sure, but this might simplify it in a way that he could find compassion
And it also has a ton of made up words in it.
So he would.
If no one remembers this, reading some Dr. Seuss recently, the man just makes words
up. Listen, you got to get that rhyme in. I don't care. Yeah. Like,
okay, actual favorite book, recent kids book. Okay. Actually, you have a lot of parents who are listeners.
I think so.
So Dr. Seuss wrote a book called The Wocket in My Pocket, where he actually just makes words up that rhyme with household items.
Oh.
So there's like a zufa. No, wait, that doesn't rhyme. A zofa on my sofa. Or a buppard in my cupboard.
Okay, that's not the word, but yeah, my cupboard.
He actually just makes stuff up. And
I love it.
That's a beautiful thing. That level of creativity.
Sure. So Dr. Seuss, also one of your favorite authors.
Absolutely.
You have three favorite authors. Well, four, if you include Michael Che. Not an author.
Future author, Michael
Barely
Che.
Barely even a human being. That's so mean. He's not that bad. Just him and Colin Jost are just like just low level news update people.
Not for everyone.
No, they're certainly not. And not for the Emmys. Thank you very much, NBC. Okay. Today has been an episode where all I did was talk shit about other people. So I feel like I'm living my best life. I would like to apologize to Lin-Manuel Miranda, Colin Jost, and Michael Che.
Thank you for pronouncing Colin Jost's name properly.
It's Jost, not Jost.
No, it's definitely Jost, but I think there's a bit where he goes by Jost. I think some, it might be like Keenan as David Ortiz like goes on.
Stopped watching the show because I didn't like it, and I think Jost sounds better. Anyways, it gives him a little like flair.
He's very flair.
Okay, before we get out of here, just reminding everybody, next week we're going to talk about How Democracies Die by Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Z. Blatt. I'm very excited about this episode. It won't have spoilers because it's nonfiction, and you're living it if you live in America, so don't worry. You know the answers. Harris, do you have anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
Thanks for having me. Excited about next week.
Yay. All right. Thank you, guys. We'll see you in the stacks. That's all for today's show. Thank you for listening, and thank you to our guest, Harris Cohn. Don't forget to check out our new video chat book club by going to patreon.com/thestacks. Thank you to our sponsor, My Mentor Book Club. Go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks for 50% off your first box of new nonfiction. I'd also like to say thank you to Audible. Get your free 30-day trial and free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you're subscribed to this show wherever you get this podcast. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas. I'll see you all in the stacks.